Hey, good evening, Steele.
Good evening, Dave.
I cut my own hair last night, Steele. I think I blended it well. What do you think?
Yeah, man. You use a weed whacker? Or
no, hair clippers. You pay $20 and then free haircuts for life once you invest the $20.
Is this a Flowbee you ordered off a TV commercial?
I wish. A Flowbee. My brother-in-law uses a Flowbee and his hair always looks great. But speaking of Flowbee, we got Spence here tonight.
That's right.
Close.
I'm wondering, Dave, are you out of surf hair now?
I am literally down to my last tablespoon of surf hair, and I don't know what I'm going to do next. I'm going to have to go to the Walmart and just look through the different hairstyling products, but I've still got a tablespoon. I'm going to make it last another month or so, and we'll see.
You know, Dave, if you had enough faith, the widow's cruise of oil would never fail. It sounds like you need good home teachers to come bless your can of surf hair.
I think I need a prophet of the Lord to come and ask to use my surf hair, and then it would just continue to go.
Wasn't that isn't that what Samson did?
Yeah, it's a misnomer that cutting the hair is what stopped his strength. It's actually when he stopped using surf hair, when he ran out.
I was going to say, I think Cecil Samuelson was a big user of surf hair during our time at BYU.
Where do you think I got it from? Yeah. That guy would just hand out samples, too. He's good.
Cecil O.
But guys.
Yeah.
What I'm probably most excited about in life is that both Spence and Steele, you're both now completely on board with Vin Diesel. And we got a few things to run through about Diesel. Are you guys ready?
Yeah. Now, Dave, this was explosive. I mean, this even penetrated my social media world, which is pretty impervious to pop culture references, especially involving fake wrestlers.
It's not fake.
Yeah.
Performance art, Steele.
Right.
There's a huge controversy. It's kind of cooled down a little bit, but Rock came out, called one of his co-stars a candy ass, and I was correct in assuming he was talking about Vin Diesel.
No, man, so it was Scott Eastwood. It's got to be Scott Eastwood.
That guy is a candy ass, but he's such a candy ass, you're not going to call him out for being one.
Fair enough.
Suspense, do you think this was real or staged?
I think this is totally staged. The skeptic in me.
Spence is the best. He's not even going to pretend to think it's real for a second, Dave. He doesn't care about drama.
They didn't. There's no way The Rock and Vin Diesel actually dislike each other, but it's going to be an awesome wrestling match.
There's been, chatter about it for years that they don't like each other, but when I came across the rumor that it might be just them getting ready for WrestleMania, this would probably be the first time I've ever watched WrestleMania if this happens. Like, I will definitely watch it if The Rock and Vin Diesel wrestle.
Yeah, so I was trying to imagine, like, if they did wrestle, if it were all staged, wouldn't they eventually want to, like, join forces with some other greater evil? I don't know enough about wrestling these days, but there's got to be, like, a universal bad guy that would come in and just, like, start doing something terrible that Vin Diesel and The Rock have to join forces to beat the team of bad wrestlers or something. Like, that would heal the rift.
Yeah, and hey, Dave, is there any way you can turn the child noise up a little bit? I'm not sure if we're picking it up very well.
We can bring them into the room. They're just in the room up next to us, but
give them the mic.
But there's actually a theory that goes parallel to this one, that the whole Trump thing is also just building up to WrestleMania, and it's going to be Trump that they face. So we'll see. We'll see.
Who would Trump's partner be? His hair?
Mike Pence. Come on.
Yeah, Mike Pence wouldn't even get into the ring.
He's going to have like a real tight Speedo that just says candy ass on the back. Or just candy. That's going to be
so
a
guys,
great reveal. Do you think like secretly cheap. Mike Pence is really jacked? Like he's like secretly super muscular? He just like very aggressively lifts weights all the time and is kind of a big roid head.
And he adopts the mild-mannered personality to throw people off his track.
Yeah, just like, on the surface, I'm just, you know, an Indianan. But deep down, I'm ripped as hell.
We'll have to wait for the vice president debates, see if he'll tear off his shirt or something.
Yeah, flex.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Tim Kaine doesn't have an interesting secret life.
Oh, he's like dead to the max. Anyway, we jump in the shark.
The dude can wail on the harmonica.
Yeah.
We're still on Diesel, guys. Wait, one more thing I wanted to cover with Diesel, and you guys might have other stuff, but when this feud happened, I had to ask myself a lot of questions. I had to do a lot of soul searching and thinking. And my question to you, is The Rock, is he winning? Is he now winning the Vin Diesel versus Rock, just career, everything overall?
Yeah, I think he's been winning ever since he stopped wrestling and started making movies. He's, like, demonstrably more charismatic, more interesting, a better actor. Vin Diesel might be more likable, but The Rock's...
No, he's not.
Oh, he's not? Well, I don't know what Vin's got on him other than, like, being, like, a meathead.
Man.
He's balder earlier. I don't know. I think The Rock is way better. But I have never seen any of his movies, and nor do I plan to. That's my 2017 goal, I guess.
I'll tell you, Steele, I saw CIA. That was a pretty awesome movie.
That's a movie?
Yeah. Did you see that, Dave?
First of all, Spence, it's Central Intelligence. Yeah, and second of all, I want to see it this weekend. Did you actually see it?
Spence, Dave hasn't seen it. Hey, Spence, tell me how it ends.
No, come on, guys. Come on.
You
spoilers.
You want me to remember the end?
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
Don't spoil it. Dave hasn't seen it.
So wait, but my main question is, Spence, like, what situation in life led you to seeing that movie before me? Like, I really can understand it.
Emmeline got to pick what date night was.
That's right. She's way into The Rock. No, I think it was just somebody from church here that was home without wife and kids and was like, I'm going to see a movie. Anybody want to go? And we settled on Central Intelligence.
Was it James McKay?
It was James McKay.
I thought so.
Yeah.
Guy's awesome.
Spence, does your wife leave you a lot? It seems like you're always watching movies that I would really like to watch when your wife takes your children away.
No, she doesn't leave that often. I saw Central Intelligence, she was here, but I ditched her for the evening.
You left her out of Central Intelligence? Yeah, not a bad choice.
No, really, you should have just left the kids alone at home for a couple hours, Spence, and gone together.
Yeah. Sitting around when you could be watching The Rock in Central Intelligence, that's a candy-ass move, Dave.
Yeah, very candy-ass.
It's total Diesel. So, guys, we've got some other stuff to discuss tonight. As much as I want to just continue on about Diesel,
I'm going to edit that whole segment out, Dave. I'm just kidding. I'll leave some of it.
Nothing.
So good evening,
guys. We're going to talk a little bit about. Yeah, hey.
Just kidding.
Hey, you've been paying attention to the election, Steele?
What's that?
Okay, so I'm really going to move on now. So we got a couple of sections coming up that I think are going to blow people's minds.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking third party politics, and then we've gotten a lot of requests to bring back this segment. It's been a while since we've had it. It's called Lost the Plot, where Steele describes one of his favorite films to us, and it's always just really entertaining and fun.
Yes.
But first, we're going to talk a little bit about third-party candidates. It's a big election year. Everybody's looking for a candidate that they can vote for without feeling nauseous. So, guys, do you have any third-party candidates you're looking at?
First things first, Dave. I think third-party is a little too mainstream for me. I don't need my alternative to be like the third best option. I'm looking for like 8th, 9th, 14th party. I want something that's like very fringe, very obscure. Mm. The weirder, the more eccentric, the more I feel captivated and really interested in what people have to say. I want people who like poll with 0.0001% of the total vote in like a single county. That's what I want from my candidates.
Do you have one like this, or is there someone you're excited about this year?
You know, Spencer actually was kind of pumping up a candidate that I do think people need to know about. His website's currently down, or it was last time I looked. Bad news. No, it's back. That's good. Probably
nice.
It was a
nice
time travel loop they got stuck in. But this guy, Spence, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, but Italian-American.
Basiago is how I would say it.
Ah, nice. Like the cheese.
Yeah, that's right. Like the cheese, but with a B at the beginning.
And this guy, one man in the name of truth, he's like a walking Bono song.
He's also a time traveler.
Yeah, also like a Bono song. And the cool part about him is that the opening sentence from his bio on his website, which is andy2016.com, by the way, Andrew D. Basiago is a prominent figure in the truth movement. And
nice.
It just grabs you because you're like, no, not truth about something, not truth in something, just the general truth movement. I don't know anybody who's opposed to a movement towards truth or for truth or on behalf of truth. It's like the best kind of movement there is. And he's a prominent figure in that movement. He's already established credibility and trust. He's wearing a striped shirt with the tie. Also a nice move.
Yeah, a little bit of a second chin. I'm liking it. Uh-huh. And I'm reviewing some of his 100 proposals. I don't know if you guys have any favorites, but I really like his Mars transparency policy.
Uh-huh.
Where he feels like the president should finally disclose the existence of the secret U.S. presence on the red planet.
Yeah, it's about time.
Like, seriously, quit holding back. Spence, do you have anything that you particularly have been, you know, struck a chord with you?
Extraterrestrial disclosure. The president should end the E.T. cover-up in a live televised address to the American people. He says, the right to know the true natural history of the cosmos that we inhabit is the common heritage of humankind. However, concealment by the U.S. government of the extraterrestrial situation has come to symbolize how the U.S. government conceals the truth from the American people. We need to know the truth.
So all that is well and good, but the big thing that appeals to me about Andy 2016 is so many of the other candidates, your first party, your second party, even your third party candidates, are just straight up speciesist. All they care about is human beings, Homo sapiens, not Andy. Because
no.
Andy wants also to protect the Sasquatch species. And here's a direct quote from one of his 100 proposals. Andy says, Sasquatch exist. I know. I am the first U.S. presidential candidate since Theodore Roosevelt to declare publicly that I have encountered Sasquatch. TR's encounter, that's Teddy Roosevelt for you guys that aren't up on the TR lingo. It occurred when a Sasquatch was scared into his campsite one night when he was on his Great North American Ape Expedition. I encountered an adult male Sasquatch and his young son when I was camping at Lake Sacandaga in the Adirondacks in 1966. The Sasquatch have matrilineal DNA that is human and patrilineal DNA from an unknown primate. The president should protect the Sasquatch by putting them on the endangered species list.
Well, there's one thing I'd like to talk to Andy about is if he's such a truther, I want him to disclose whether this encounter was sexual or not. Let's just get that out there right now, Andy.
Well, here's the thing. We're going to have him on, Dave. This is a surprise to you, but we're going to bring him on next week for a special episode of Off the Chain. You can ask him yourself how
sexual
he got with Sasquatch.
Will this be before or after he has won the election? Because he's going to travel back in time, right, to visit the podcast?
Spencer, first thing you need to know about Andy Basiago, he's not an either-or guy. He's a yes-and-both guy.
Are you talking about the sexual encounter or?
Yes and both, Spencer.
Okay.
That's who we're backing. Spencer and I are big on the Basiago train.
I don't know that we need to explore this any further. That's it. Anybody else got any? Clinton King, Spence, is that something that you've looked into? Or is that
he's
is that
dead,
more
Dave,
of a...
but he's somebody I love. Great American hero. Super weird.
Tell
dude.
Me about him.
So, he was an African-American from a very prominent Southern family. He was one of the...
Nice.
I believe he was the first person to try to integrate the University of Mississippi. He tried to enroll, and doctors declared him insane and threw him in an asylum. They forcibly incarcerated him. because, they said, only a crazy black man would try to integrate an all-white school. This happened the year that my father was born in the United States of America. Just wow. Crazy, right? Like, history that we're generally unaware of. He went on to become like a perpetual candidate for all different kinds of offices and was just a very eccentric, very interesting character. One of the, like, really singular American lives. There's this long piece that I read a couple years ago that makes me just think, wow, what a strange, wonderful, weird dude.
Did he ever win? Did he ever make it to city council or something?
No, that would have, I think, spoiled it for him. He had no illusions that he was going to win. He was just running to be running. Those are my kind of guys.
I think my candidate of choice is going to be Limberbutt McCubbin. Who is a male cat from Kentucky.
Yeah.
Who
officially registered as a Democratic candidate for the 2016 United States presidential election. Clearly, it's too late for him to win the Democratic nomination, but I'll be pushing for a vigorous write-in campaign. He's been officially endorsed by Jezebel.
Oh, yeah, Jezebel's on board. Must be a good
biblical harlot, not the website.
Exactly.
This is something that Spence brought to my attention that I was really pleased with. I talked to you earlier about my concern about speciesist candidates. There are a number of historical non-human electoral candidates, and they are my favorite thing, I think, ever, especially when they win. We've talked about our missions before, Dave, but I went to Hartlepool in my mission, and Hartlepool is famous as being the place called the city's known as the Monkey Hangers, because there's a legend that they hung a monkey as a French spy during the Napoleonic Wars. And so the football team, their mascot is a guy in a monkey suit whose name is Hangus the Monkey, or Angus the Monkey. And he ran for mayor like 15 years ago. And he surprisingly, the Hangus the Monkey mascot won his election as mayor of Hartlepool. The guy became mayor. The guy in the monkey suit became mayor. And then he took the monkey suit off and was reelected like 3 different times. And so he served as mayor of Hartlepool for like 12 years. And then eventually they got rid of the position, but otherwise I think he'd still be mayor.
What is his stance on Sasquatch? Is he for protection or against it? That's really important to me.
Yeah, I don't know. We should get him on to come on after Andy B. Next week. The other thing I was reading...
Yeah, we could get...
Connected to this. It's sort of connected, Dave. There was a Brazilian group of pranksters, and they put up a monkey as a candidate for office, and their electoral slogan was... Vote monkey, get monkey. It was like trying to tell people, you know, if you vote for the monkey, you're going to get a monkey if he wins. Because they were really upset with all these people in Brazil running on one platform, and then as soon as they got elected, implementing a different platform. It was like the old bait and switch. So their strategy was to just tell the voters, vote monkey, get monkey. And that's our new household motto, Dave.
It sounds like truth. It's just truth. That's all it is. That's more. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of third parties over the years. I'm a big fan of the Bull Moose Party, of course, with my man TR.
Yeah, the first Sasquatch president.
Yeah. And I'm a pretty big fan of Rent is Too Damn High, party based in New York City.
Yeah.
Those guys are making changes.
Yeah, apparently they believe that the rent was too damn high in New York City, Dave.
Yeah, your vote rent is too damn high, that's what you get. You get someone that's upset about the rent.
And that has a real sweet beard and mustache.
He kind of reminded me of Ted Hawkins, I have to say.
This is another non-human candidate. There was a goat put up for election by the McGillicuddy Serious Party.
Yeah.
Which was a party in England.
Yeah, you love New Zealand politics, Spence. You never stop talking about New Zealand electoral politics.
So the purpose of the McGillicuddy Serious Party was to put forward the most ridiculous proposals ever. So among them were free dung, like just giving anybody dung.
Hold on. The thing is, were people paying for dung before that in New Zealand? Because that seems like a bad bad market to be in.
Yeah. Who knows?
It's a commodity.
It was enough of an issue. They advocated for leaving bottles of beer on all beaches so that an invading army would get drunk instead of attacking.
Smart.
Smart. And then restricting the vote to minors. Only those under 18 years of age could vote.
That's actually a pretty cool idea.
That's how you get The Rock as president. That's not bad. That's not bad at all.
Yeah.
There's so, like a Tony inspired political party, Spence, I think you've discovered.
A what party?
I think it was inspired by Tony or the musician Andrew WK, but I'm not sure. I think it's just called Party exclamation mark. Tell me about them. Who suggested these guys?
That was an Australian party, the Party. And I think they only stood for one election, and I don't know what the issue was. It was like a single issue party, but the name was pretty sweet. There's a guy named Cecil G. Murgatroyd, who was up for election first with the Imperial British Conservative Party. So if you can see a picture of this guy, he looks pretty awesome. I would have voted for him. He's got like really bushy brown hair. He's wearing a beret.
Cecil Murgatroyd, Spence?
Cecil G. Murgatroyd.
Nice. And that was his birth name, or that was his campaign name?
As far as I know, that was his birth name. He had
Born for Greatness.
He wrote a song called The Other Wankers. Or no, that was his band. I'm sorry. It was a band, my turn to take over your role, Steele. It was a band devoted to promoting sexual self-satisfaction.
I don't know if that's an act that really needs a lot of support. I think people are doing all right with it without like a band encouraging them to go for it.
I saw it as a way to combat AIDS.
Dave, I don't know why we don't just have Spence to come on and talk about third parties every week.
Let's just do that. Let's change the format of the podcast. This is what we've been searching for all this time.
We found our niche. There's the sun-ripened warm tomato party. That was a Australian party that ran in the late 80s.
And I'm an Australian sex party? That's intriguing.
I'm not sure if it's more of an event or a political party, but in either case, I think it was pretty popular.
There was the Canadian Extreme Wrestling Party. This was a party formed in Canada, obviously, and they chose their leaders by having wrestling matches.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Again, that's another way to get The Rock to be president.
Yeah. The first winner was a professional wrestler named Quentin Barboni. He won in a battle royale to become the first leader.
Can I tell you about one of my favorite? This isn't a political party on the national stage, but it was involved in student government at the University of Wisconsin. They are known as the Pail and Shovel Party, and they were legendary pranksters. Their most famous two of things was one day they put like 100 and something pink flamingos all over the lawn of Bascom Hall. Like people showed up and there's pink flamingos everywhere. But the really awesome one was they campaigned for all this student government money and promised that they would waste it. And they built a huge head and torch of the Statue of Liberty and then snuck it out on the Lake Mendota the day that it froze. So it looked like the Statue of Liberty had fallen in the lake and just the head and the torch were above water. Yeah.
Planet of the Ape tribute. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it's really good.
A couple other parties that I liked is the Anti-Nebraska Party. I think this has something to do with slavery, but I like to think that it's just anti-Nebraska. It's not a great state. Lots of tumbleweeds. Not a pleasant drive. And, of course, the Anti-Monopoly Party. It's a terrible game.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, the single-issue platforms, those are the parties that really have real staying power. There's a party in America known as the Know-Nothings, and primarily they wanted to destroy Freemasonry. They wanted to kill the Masons.
I think they succeeded.
Yeah.
Are there any Masons still? Is that still happening?
Man, didn't you read Da Vinci Code?
Several times. Yeah. Love those guys.
How could you not read the Da Vinci Code?
I like how Dave just said, love those guys.
Those Da Vincis. Those guys are doing great work.
It's like the Neesons. Dave, the thing that I want to know, though, is, I mean, we've covered the candidates we really want to see, but the lamestream media, they're going to host this debate coming up, and we know they're just going to throw them a bunch of softball questions and ask stuff where, I mean, a buffoon's going to have the stage for half the time saying stupid stuff. But what I want to know from you is, What should they be asking at the upcoming presidential debate?
It's always softballs. It's always policy. What you're going to do with other foreign leaders, that kind of stuff. But we want to understand these candidates, know how they're going to react under pressure. A few ones. So I don't know. Should we do like a practice debate where we're throwing out questions and we're answering them, or just go through the questions? What do you guys think?
I think you got to throw out a question or two, and then we can give a thumbs up, thumbs down. I don't know what we should do to respond, but I don't know if I really want to practice answering questions.
Let's do this. You tell me. We're going to go through these questions. Let's talk about the merits of them and if they need to be in a debate.
Okay.
What is the name of your hairstyle?
Yes, that should be the opening question to every debate. Like, when you get to know a person, what they ought to do in the camera is, like, they should start and do, like, a slow pan down the candidate, but start from right above their head and then bring the camera down, linger on the hair, forehead, eyes, and do, like, a 4 or 5 minute long, uncomfortable shot. And then you're back to the shoes, and then all of a sudden it's a fast camera jump up to the hair. And then you don't see anything else but the candidate's hair, and then you say, "Welcome to the debate tonight. Excuse me, candidate such and such. What is the name of your hairstyle?" And then, like, it slowly zooms out as they're talking about their hairstyle, and then you're ready to go. That would be ratings gold.
And it helps you understand if you're with the candidate or not. Because while you're seeing this, you're thinking, like, I have an idea of what I'd call that a hairstyle. And then if the candidate says the same name that you're thinking, you're like, oh, yeah, like, we're on the same page. We're similar people, and I can understand where this person's coming from.
What greater indicator of candidate honesty and creativity could there be?
For instance, frequently throughout his life, Spence's would have been the Joseph Smith. I don't know what you would call it now.
I think the Emmeline.
That's true. It's been a while since I had the Joseph Smith.
Yeah, brother Joseph.
Maybe that'll make a comeback.
All right, next question. Favorite burrito?
Nice. Very good question. You know, the demographics of the country are changing. I don't think that we do enough to talk about multiculturalism in presidential debates generally. And that's like a nice kind of bridge question. Everybody loves burritos, right?
It gives the candidates an opportunity to either embrace or repudiate immigrants, too.
I think we've all seen, the Donald's Trump's excellent tweet where he's eating a taco bowl. And I think that really brought a lot of Hispanic people over to his cause, because food is something that unites.
I thought it was Mexicans. I thought he said he loves the Mexicans. It wasn't Hispanics. I'm not sure what he feels about the Latin countries, but I think he's into the Mexicans.
It was a little more focused than I was saying. Yeah, that's correct. He's focusing on one nationality. Next question. What about people driving slow in the left lane on the highway? Do we execute them or what?
Way better than the generic capital punishment questions. We have like a crime that really fits the bill, and we just get right down to it.
And really, it's a question of methods. What methods do we employ?
Is this like
Mario Kart style? Like, you shoot a turtle shell at them? Do we? Is this like, we've got excess military equipment? We could follow them with a jet plane and just send missiles.
Another follow up to that. I think this goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
Shouldn't presidents go with Ned Stark's leadership philosophy that if you order the death, you wield the sword? Simple yes or no.
So that should be rephrased as a question, because right now it's a terrible question, but it's a great idea. Like, you want to know their opinion on this, but right now that's a very limited. Shouldn't we? Like, it's sort of the manipulation pattern there, Dave.
You know the answer I want, though, Steele. Yeah, well. And they have to give it to me.
Okay. Execution by sword would be very Highlander of us as a country, I have to say.
Yeah. It's a more humane way than a lot of these things we're doing. It's very quick. You make that sword sharp enough, like, it's just going to take a moment, especially if it's what's the metal that Ned Stark's sword was?
Valyrian steel.
Yeah, that's going to get it done.
You're also creating jobs for sword makers. That's a huge economic boost. I mean, we execute enough people in this country, there's probably thousands of swords we'd be putting out every year.
Oh, man.
You know, there's been a lot of stuff in the news, Dave, about candidates' medical fitness and health stuff. I think as a healthcare professional, you probably have insight into the questions that we really ought to be asking about candidates' health backgrounds and pasts. Anything you'd want to ask in the next debate?
Something that could really help us is, what's your best dance move? Please demonstrate.
It's all about physical fitness.
This, you know how great that would be? That would be one of my happiest moments in a presidential debate.
I think you'd learn a lot very quickly about their current state of health. I mean, FDR, I don't know if he ever would have won the presidency if he had to face this kind of thing.
He'd pull out like a murder ball, like wheelchair rugby move, and I bet he'd wow people. I think he was surprisingly nimble in that chair. But you know what? If we had this as a debate question, I can guarantee that the Obama family would be like a political dynasty. There would be no such thing as presidential term limits. They would never be defeated.
I don't know. We'll see what Trump and Hillary can do.
Which one of the founders do you think had the best dance moves?
Which one of the founders?
Was it Ben Franklin? You know, that guy was getting it on.
The dude, he went to Paris and he just partied. Like, he was barely doing his diplomatic mission. He was just partying over there.
Guy invented electricity, Spence. Of course he can dance.
All right. So how about you guys? You got any questions that you feel are important for the presidential debate?
Yeah, I think this is maybe related to Steele's earlier question about health, but there's not enough truth being offered up right now, and we know that there's a program to cryogenically freeze people. This has been run by the Department of Defense, and I've been hearing rumors that, in fact, both candidates were cryogenically frozen and then resuscitated. I want them to offer proof that that's not the case.
If they can.
Yeah, so I would ask the point blank, can you offer that proof?
Yeah, that's going to be really suspenseful television.
We have a couple of nervous candidates, yeah.
Yeah, and what constitutes proof, Spence? Like an affidavit that says they pull out of their pocket? Like, I'm glad you asked because I happen to have an affidavit right here.
No, we all know it would be the genetic signature. Because when you're cryogenically frozen and then brought back, your DNA undergoes a small change. It's detectable, but
it's all wearing tiny parkas. All your DNA.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, but yeah, simple blood test. Okay. And why doesn't the debate start with just a simple blood test? We draw blood, we run a number of these things, we're checking for STDs, anemia, your liver function, your kidneys. Let's just do it.
We could incorporate that into my slow pan here too, Dave, where you get the headshot, and then when you get down to the arm, you see like a vial of blood being drawn out of the candidate's arm, you know, and you linger there.
Yeah, you're seeing it's their blood. It's not someone else's blood. You can't fake that on live television.
And then you have fewer reptilian lizard race people trying to run for president since they don't actually have human blood. Two birds, one stone, Dave.
Bob Dole never could have run.
So the big thing that I would love to see would be something like rapid fire kind of Mad Libs, where we have a series of fill in the blank questions where candidates have like 5 seconds and they just have to fill in the blank, because I think this is like a Rorschach test for like the candidate's true soul. And the first question that I would ask would be like, you'd have Anderson Cooper, you'd have somebody like Wolf Blitzer be like, Secretary Clinton, please fill in the blank. There ain't no party like a blank party. And then she's got 5 seconds. Boom, whatever comes to mind.
She's got to think on her feet. I mean, this is like getting woken up in the middle of the night. North Korea's got a nuke aimed at America. Like, that's the kind of thinking. Yeah. You've got to just be able to go.
Can you make an important, the right decision under pressure? America's waiting. There ain't no party like a blank party, Mr. Trump. Gary Johnson.
And really, you know, this section also can show the moderator's got skills. I've tried to think of these questions. They're tough to think of. Still, to get like the right blank in the right spot to really get a good response.
I think the key is thinking about like late 80s, early 90s hip hop lyrics. That's really the key. Just remove words from those and you're kind of golden.
So like blank, there it is.
Yeah.
Or I've been spending most of my life living in a blank paradise.
Yeah, that's really revealing. And then every once in a while you switch it up and you'd be like, answer for your opponent. And then that'd be fun too. Because it'd be like,
I've got a car,
burns in.
I've got a car full of girls, and it's going real swell. Next stop is blank.
Yeah. Anything from Regulate would be a great presidential debate question.
So I just hope that Anderson Cooper, I hope these guys are listening to this, and we can avoid just like the stale, stagnant questions we'd be getting at most presidential debates, and we can really get to the hardest stuff.
The other thing that I think we should do is we should I don't know how we could enforce this, but we, like, seize the candidate's personal mobile device, and they read off a list of all the music that's currently on their iPad or their iPod or their phone or whatever. It would be terrifying.
Maybe, like, a list of also the last 10 movies they've watched and, you know, last 10 books they've read. Like, yeah, we can get into their pop culture, what they're consuming.
Yeah, that'd be good.
What do you think Hillary Clinton listens to?
Well, when they ask her, she says stuff like, she'll just name pop artists. She's like, oh, I listen to a little bit of Beyonce. I like Barbra Streisand. Like, she mentions, like, a popular musician, generally, like, a progressive female from, like, every generation. You know, occasionally I'll listen to a little Drake. You know, like, come on. She doesn't.
What do you think's really on there, though? Is it all, like, smooth jazz?
I think it's, like, Fleetwood Mac. That's her era. You can go your own way. Go your own way.
The only thing I can imagine Trump listening to is, like, songs that he's recorded himself singing.
You know, like, I bet you he's, like, secretly ghost performing with Jimmy Dolan in The Straight Shot.
Yeah, how does Trump not have his own band?
This, like, a vanity project, spoken word.
Yeah, man.
All my records are gold records.
Because you know that's what Bernie's doing. He's just listening to his same mix over and over again.
Oh, Bernie. Those were the days.
Bernie probably listens to a lot of Bob Marley.
Peter Tosh, I think, more is Bernie's. Anyway, we've devolved a bit, Dave. I'm ready to lose the plot.
Can you do it?
Yeah.
So guys, there was a much beloved film that came out a while ago called The Mechanic, starring Jason Statham. And everybody loved it. Universal acclaim. Steele was a huge fan. And yeah. So Steele was super excited when he saw they were making a sequel. He called me. We talked about it for a while. And it came out just this summer. Steele's can't stop raving about it. It's called The Mechanic Resurrection. And it's starring, of course, one of our favorite actors, Jason Statham.
What's funny about this, Dave, I think you got dates mixed up. I hate to kind of call you out on the show, but it actually was not released this summer. That was when it reached the dollar theaters. It was actually a holiday movie. My family goes to see a movie every year at Christmas time, and this was the big Christmas blockbuster this year. Because everybody knows, I mean, many people know the story of Jesus of Nazareth, the Christ figure. Christmas time, he puts the reason for the season and all that. So The Mechanic Resurrection was a really interesting, like, it's a retelling of the Jesus story, but in 20th century New York. So there's this guy, he works as a mechanic, and it's actually the guy who fixes the cars for Click and Clack from Car Talk. Remember those guys?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're great.
So the film starts, and it starts at Click and Clack's funeral. Because they died. It was real sad. And it was a tragic automobile accident. But they died. They're dead. And everybody's there grieving, and they're very sad. And you see in the back row this guy in, like, an ill-fitting suit, and his hands are, like, smudged. And he's just, like, leaning against the wall. Doesn't look real comfortable. And the camera lingers on him afterwards, and it turns out that he's the mechanic. It's Jason Statham. So he's a mechanic. That's what he does for a living. He fixes cars, and he's just a humble guy. And instead of Jesus, you know, the Christ figure being a carpenter, they're imagining him as a mechanic in contemporary America. He doesn't know how to read, and, like, he performs a series of miracles. And in the end, he's killed by an angry mob, but he comes back to life. And he rides a hot rod up to heaven, kind of Elijah in chariot style. So it's called The Mechanic Resurrection because he rises from the dead. And it's just a great, like, family film. I mean,
so some of these miracles were just really touching, really powerful, moved people to tears.
Yeah.
Can you give me an example of the ones that he did?
So one of them, like, he's in a really rough neighborhood. And he's been called out there to go fix a car. And it's a setup by some of his enemies. And so he's there, and he's about to fix the car, and he realizes, uh-oh, this is not looking good. And there's these three really tough-looking dudes that start walking down the street with, like, baseball bats. One of them's got a huge, like, spike point out of it. And it's pretty clear that they're coming to kill him and beat him up very badly. Mm-hmm. He starts to get in a panic. And in the end, he just, like, you know, it looks like the motions of prayer. He's concentrating real hard. And he sticks a screwdriver into the ignition, turns it, the car starts, and he's able to drive out of there. And the kind of bullies are, like, looking at him in amazement going, what? And it turns out, like, he makes it another 2 miles out of the place, and then you start seeing this black smoke come out of the back of the car. And he's like, oh, I better take a look at this. And so he turns off the car, pops up the open the hood, and you look inside, and you realize there's no engine in the car.
Whoa. Yeah. Whoa, yeah.
And you realize, wow, that's why the bully, the whole setup was that it was a car that needed fixing, and he was going to discover that it didn't have an engine in it, and that's when it was going to turn bad. But he never had to discover it because, you know, he's the mechanic resurrected.
And what's interesting is all the series of his miracles in this film are automobile related, and it just really fits with the character. Now I know you saw this movie with Spence. You told me you called him. You said he had to come. Spence, did you have a favorite scene?
There's the one where he happens upon the wreck that has happened.
Yeah.
And the cars, they're just kind of mangled. The people have all been taken away to the hospital, and he kneels down on the street corner and weeps because these cars are just in, they're totally broken up, crushed. There's like a door kind of on the other side of the street, and one car is turned up on its side. And as he's kneeling there weeping, one of the cars starts to reform itself into the its former shape.
Yeah.
And then the other car turns over onto its wheels and also reforms itself. And he realizes that he has this magic, or, you know, this miraculous power to restore cars back to their former bodies.
And the thing that Spence left out, though, there's this line that just slays because he's crying and he goes, Audi, Audi, Lama Sabachthani, you know, like the old echo of the biblical line. It was just so good. Because one of the cars was an Audi.
I think when Steele and I watched that, I looked over and I definitely saw a tear coming out of Steele's eyes. And I had tears streaming down my face too. It was really powerful.
Yeah, it's kind of outside Statham's normal sort of action genre, but powerful, moving. Yeah, it's going to be in, I hope it's in my Christmas stocking this year. Fingers crossed.
He is risen, Dave.
Well, guys, and then he'll rise again. I don't know what the third one will be called, but I'm excited. So we've had a great time, and we're coming to the close of the show. This is one of our favorite segments, Unchained Melodies.
Yes.
Today we're going to share some outsider music. We've talked about some outsider candidates for presidency, and we want to share some outsider music with you guys. Stuff that we think Andrew Basiago might really dig. I'll kick us off. Daniel Johnston, you guys are probably familiar with him. Interesting guy, bipolar. Made a lot of interesting music throughout his life. Started off just recording songs on like a little tape machine. And this is one of his just most poignant songs that I love. True Love Will Find You in the End.
Up until true love will find you in the end. This is a promise with a catch. Only if you're looking can it find you. It's true love is searching too, but how can it recognize you?
it's just such a sweet, heartfelt song, and from just such a, I don't know, troubled man. He's great. I love that song.
What's your exposure to that song, Dave? What's the story? How'd that come to be your song?
I heard Wilco cover it, and I really liked the Wilco cover. And then I looked into Daniel Johnston's music, and I listened to some of it. And our friend Amy Anderson, she gave me some mixed CDs with some Daniel Johnston on it.
I got a song here. The song that I want to play, similarly like eccentric, sweet, kind of strange weirdo. This guy's an American painter who lives in Germany, and he's got a couple of records, and most of his songs are kind of like obsessed with scatological or inappropriate things. And so I'm not going to play one of those, but he's also like this great little singer-songwriter. This is a guy named Dan Reeder, and the song is You'll Never Surf Again.
I went to the doctor said, sit down, I got some bad news. He said, put your pants back on, tired of those shoes. Well, I brace myself for the worst, I knew this could mean to me. He said, you'll never, ever, ever serve again. Never serve again. Said I tell you as your doctor, as your friend, take a few days off, let this sink in. But I knew from the first that a dream had come to an end. Never, ever, ever serve again.
I was taken aback by his voice at first. I didn't expect it. And then as the song moved forward, I enjoyed it. I liked it. Spence, do you have anything weird for us?
Yeah, this is the Toadies. I come from the water. It's all about coming from where you're from and getting into an unfamiliar environment.
I love the Toadie Spence. That album, I used to listen to it all the time.
I did too.
I'm a huge
fan. That like basically never left the car when I was in high school.
Possum Kingdom.
Yeah.
Do you wanna die?
I played that song the other day, and Mara was like, "You gotta turn this off. This is terrible." We got a kid. And I was like,
no way! It still holds up. It still holds up. Come on. So guys, my next one is They Might Be Giants. I hope that everybody in the world knows about these guys, but they're just odd fellas. They started recording music in the 80s. It'd just be like the two guys, and they would have a drum machine going on in the background. For a long time, they did this service where you could call a number, and you would listen to a song that they left on the answering machine. And on one of their records, they did this kind of experimental thing called Fingertips, where they just did like 15 straight songs that are like 5 seconds long. So we'll play a couple of them for you. It's just kind of funny.
I hear the wind blow, I hear the wind blow. It seems to say, hello, hello. I'm the one who loves you so.
Hey now everybody, now hey now everybody, hey now everybody now.
Who's that?
And it goes on. But have you guys, feel like at 13 you had to listen.
Particle Man changed my life, and so I bought the Flood record. And then I got Apollo 18 from the BMG Music Club, and I used to listen to that CD on random. So, like, every other song would be one of the fingertips. It was, like, the best experience, because you never knew what was going to happen next. It was awesome. Or shuffle, or whatever that mode was on the old CD players. That was great.
Shuffle. That's what they designed it for. They're like, let's make a CD that works well with... Yeah, like they thought about that first. So yeah, you're totally on board with the Giants.
Yes. Yeah. Are those guys from New Jersey?
I don't remember. They live in New York City. I saw them. I've seen them a few times. I saw them New Year's Eve in New York City one year. It was great.
Probably a bunch of really stylish people there.
The coolest people in the tri-state area.
Yeah. All right, so the song that I want to play, we're talking about outsider politicians. There's nobody quite like this woman. This was Congresswoman Melinda Jackson Parker, and the song is Cousin Mosquito, number one.
My friends, lend me your ears. I have a story to tell you about Mr. Mosquito. Now when you're in the tropics... Friends, lend me your ears.
I decided to play.
I have a story to tell you about Mr. Mosquito. Now when you're in the tropics, beware of that tiny insect called Mosquito.
It's good.
Everyone is cousin to him. Take no chances with Brother Mosquito. He has the sting of death. When he sings a solo,
it's about to get to the good part where she goes, Cousin Mosquito. Anyway, it's an amazing song. Spence, what's your last song for us?
This is Leonard Cohen, a man who probably 95% of people on the street wouldn't really know his name, but I think a lot of he's influenced a lot of famous musicians in his day. He wrote a song called The Partisan, or he didn't write the song. He recorded a version of the song in English. It was written originally to celebrate the French partisans who had fought against the occupation during World War II. It's kind of a haunting song.
When they poured across the border, I was cautioned to surrender. This I could not do. I took my gun and died. I have changed my name so often. I've lost my wife and children, but I've many friends. And some of them are with me. An old woman gave us shelter, kept us hidden in the garret. Then the soldiers came. She died without a whisper. There were three of us this morning. I'm the only one this evening, but I must go on. The frontiers are my prison. All the wind is blowing.
That's like the most Spencer song we've ever played.
I really enjoyed it, actually. I clicked the little check. It's now in my songs. I really liked it. And Leonard Cohen, I listened to the Malcolm Gladwell's podcast the other week, and he talked about Leonard Cohen, and he talked about a time when Leonard Cohen talked to Bob Dylan about songwriting, and Bob Dylan would just sit down and write like a hit awesome song in 5 minutes, and Leonard Cohen would work on his songs for for years until he felt like it was close enough that he could record it. It's an interesting guy.
Yeah.
It's the difference between Canadians and Americans right there, Dave. Leonard Cohen was a poet, actually, a published poet before he became a songwriter and musician.
The tortured Canadian.
Yeah. I bet his poems rhymed.
Yeah. But we've come to a close. Book wisdom.
Book wisdom this week is from a guy named Aaron Naparstek.
Oh, legendary poet. Legendary.
He wrote a book called Honku, The Zen Antidote to Road Rage. There's this experience he had. He was living in New York City and heard somebody outside his window just laying on the horn. And he looked outside, and the guy was honking like crazy, but the light was red. So, like, it wasn't his turn to go anyway. So Aaron was angry and frustrated, and his first instinct was to grab eggs and throw them at the guy's car. And then he realized that he was succumbing to the rage just like somebody driving would be. So instead, he sat back and had this brilliant idea to compose what he calls a honku, which are just haikus about road rage. So I'll share a couple with you. The first one, Ford, GM, Chrysler, 0% financing, great deal, more traffic. The next one, our urban fabric, the cheap upholstery of traffic engineers. And the last one, together again at the stoplight. Was it worth all of the speeding? So next time you're stuck in traffic and feeling like you're just ready to kill somebody, you just make yourself a little honku. You'll calm me down.
I just wonder if he sells like a CD of him reading these behind like some nice new age music just to help everybody stay chill. Cause I think that's what we all need. It's been nice to chat with you and go through some really important stuff tonight. Thanks for sharing that, Spence. And we're always happy to have you on, Spence.
Indeed, Spence. Have a great evening.
Thanks.
Off the chain. It's off the chain. Welcome to this world. It's off the chain.
Have you ever seen The Abyss, Spence?
Do I need to answer that question, Dave?
At one point, because they want to go deeper than they've ever been, they make the substance that you breathe that's actually liquid, so that your lungs don't collapse underneath the pressure of being that deep. And it was Tang.
Nice. You remember the movie Standing or Walking Tall?
Yeah, I own it. It's really good.
Of course you do.
Oh, man, life-changing. A great argument for authoritarianism. Just give The Rock a friggin' plank of wood and make him in charge of everybody.